Kia ora, welcome to episode 70 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
It's been a huge week, in fact a mind-boggling day for news from a galaxy far, far away, so we're going to jump in and talk a lot of Star Wars. First up, just a little bit of an explanation. This podcast is going to cover a lot. In fact, we usually come into these podcasts with three or four pages of notes, but because of what's been going down in the past 24 hours and preceding week, there's just, we've got a load of bullet lists and we're going to just have to try and work through it. And then, of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to screen on Disney Plus tonight. We're expecting that at 7 p.m. New Zealand time, two episodes back to back. Just a reminder that it's only this week that it's screening on Fridays. From next week, it will be on Wednesdays. So, in fact, we've only got 5 days to wait for episode 3. So, what we've always done when there's a Disney Plus series in the past is not talk about the episodes until after the weekend, after it's screened. So, early next week, round about Tuesday, we'll probably need to do two podcasts. One to talk about two episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and another one just to really catch up on all of the news that has come out of the Star Wars Celebration event. We're going to hit on a lot of the Celebration news from day one, but we will cycle back around to talk about that in a lot more detail next week.
Sitting down to record this, we're minutes after the first day of Star Wars Celebration has sort of wrapped for the day. So we're going to go through the sort of the major news from that. But as you can imagine, they're going to have the sort of the Kenobi screening for the guests at Celebration that are able to get into that panel. That'll happen tonight. Something may be sort of divulged there in terms of like extra sort of presentations. And then, of course, the subsequent further 3 days. So there's going to be a lot of news by the time this weekend is over.
I hope all that structure makes sense, so just bear with us. We're very, very excited to have so much Star Wars content to talk to and really, you know, appreciate having an audience out there that just wants to talk about it as much as we do.
And a little bit sleep deprived and a little bit hyped because some of us have been up since around 3 or 4 this morning when the convention in America sort of kicked off. There's been a lot of stuff online to sort of catch up with people on the convention floor posting pictures of products and all sorts of things.
All right, first up, of course, at Celebration, and it was here first thing in the morning New Zealand time, it was the Andor teaser trailer. We were expecting this. Great to see it come out so early and, you know, love it. We've put a screen cap gallery of all the scenes, frame by frame, upon the SWNZ website, so do check that out if you want to just, you know, take a little bit more time to work through all the detail. Really been looking forward to this series in its entirety. It's 12 episodes long. We now have a formal definitive release date. It's the 31st of August. That's only about a little over a month after Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to finish screening on Disney Plus, which is, you know, quite cool. Just a small breather there before we move into another live action series. But yeah, great trailer. Some really cool visuals.
Yeah, I feel like the release date is exciting. It does speak to me that Disney Plus is hoping to keep Star Wars fans subscribed, so they're not giving more than a month between, because if there was like 2 maybe 3 months you're like, oh, I'll just like stop subscribing for a few months, save my dollars, and then resubscribe when the next episode drops. They're gonna keep people tight together, so I think this could be the start of what is basically a long chain of Star Wars content for the platform.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot in previous podcast, SWNZ podcasts, about the fact that we've got so much material coming out that it's going to be quite continuous by, you know, some point, and it looks like we're heading into that point in time. So yeah, what do we see in the Andor trailer? A little bit hard to really interpret what's going on because this is just a teaser, just some flashes of scenes. So we see what looks like Andor's home planet. We see Genevieve O'Reilly playing Mon Mothma on Coruscant. We see some other what we anticipate being new characters.
Yeah, there were some really fun things that stood out to me, as you say, seeing Mon Mothma in sort of, it feels like a redemption, because obviously this actress played her in episode 3, but a lot of the sort of Senate and Senator scenes was eliminated from that movie. So some of the scenes with a lot of the sort of the Republic senators around Padme were eventually sort of trimmed from the movie. So a lot of those scenes never really got seen. And so this sort of feels like we're getting her put back and sort of really celebrated, because Mon Mothma has always been an important important figure in the rebellion, so you can't really tell the rebellion story without including Mon Mothma. So I'm glad that she features heavily in the trailer. It looks like we see her even in the Senate in some scenes.
There's a scene of an empty Senate chamber.
Which is really fun, because it feels like it's really connecting the bridge between episode 3 and episode 4. And speaking of that, there are some scenes where we see episode 3 era clone troopers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting. Just a couple of things. Yeah, you mentioned this is bridging the gap between 3 and Rogue One, of course. It's set 5 years before Rogue One. We're hoping for three seasons. Initially, there was some word on the street that, semi-official word, that there's going to be 5 seasons. It's been cut back to 3. As we mentioned in previous podcasts, the current production run is for 18 months. Season 1 was in production and filming for 9 months, so we're speculating that we're going to get season 2 and 3 back to back. But anyway, 5 years before Rogue One, so a bit of that's just a bit of a context there. And yeah, clone troopers. And I think it's a little bit hard to tell because they're extremely blurry. There is stormtroopers as well. We may actually see stormtroopers in the trailer as well as clone troopers, which is quite an interesting mix.
Yeah, there does appear to be some element of flashback, or at least some sort of story sort of setting. There does appear to be a young Cassian Andor depicted in this one. So we might see clone troopers in sort of more of a flashback. And then as we see sort of stormtroopers in the modern era, it's obviously with the sort of editing style of trailers, it's hard to get a definitive timeline here. But it's just very exciting because almost all of the clone troopers in episode 3 were digital. There wasn't really armor made. So we know for these new sort of era ones, they make the costumes, they make armor. So it'll be fascinating to see physical armor clone troopers from sort of the episode 3 era on screen. I'm just, that was so exciting to me seeing that in the trailer.
Yeah. So this is, as we said, 12 episodes long, nearly 3 months. So yeah, I guess it's highly likely we'll see quite a bit of flashback material. I mean, the line, been in this since I was 6 years old or whatever, that Cassian Andor speaks in Rogue One is almost a meme at this point in time. It's such a strong notion that I think they will play on it in this series.
Yeah, also fun to see our first look at Stellan Skarsgård. Yep. I wasn't sure what kind of role he'd be playing. It does appear that he is a rebellion sort of aligned character. He certainly isn't in Imperial garb. I thought maybe because we hadn't really seen much in the way of casting about who the Imperials are. We do see a fairly strong Imperial officer presence in this trailer. We see lots of sort of admirals in there sitting around tables.
Yeah.
We're seeing there is a female character that's wearing a white tunic with a jacket or some sort of coat over it. Mm-hmm. That's giving me very strong Director Krennic vibes, obviously sort of tying into that. I am curious to know if we will ever get a little glimpse of Krennic in this, because obviously he is still alive in this era. It's not till Rogue One that we sort of see his demise. So it'll be really interesting to see how many other little characters or Imperials we might see pulled into this.
Yeah, well, I've seen reference to the fact that this is a very, very large ensemble cast with quite a few key characters carrying over into subsequent seasons. So I think there's a lot of space. You know, they've specifically said that there's going to be a lot of main significant characters, not just people that cross that the heroes cross paths with. So I think there's a lot of space for key cameos.
I think that's really important, and I'm glad to see that it's not just Cassian. Because if we think back to Rogue One, it is an ensemble. Rogue One isn't just Cassian or just Jyn Erso. It is like the team of people come from all sort of corners of the galaxy. We've got the Imperial that defected. You know, we've got the hardcore rebellion. We've got the new recruit that has sort of old school ties to it. We've got the former Imperial droid helping out. You know, all these sorts of people. So I'm really excited to get in and sort of learn more about some of the other characters in the rebellion, the people that Cassian worked with, and sort of get a really sense of like different viewpoints, different characters. I'm really glad that it's not just one person, especially when we've got so many hours, sum total, of these stories to tell. There's so much potential to really give us new and interesting characters. And you do see several actors and actresses being highlighted in this trailer that does give the indication that they will be somewhat more featured.
All right. So we will talk about this a little bit more down the line when we do another podcast next week. But do check out the ScreenCat Gallery on SWNZ. Like I say, you'll get a frame-by-frame and breakdown of each of the scenes. Let's talk about Mandalorian Season 3 just briefly. We'd historically discussed that this might be coming out later in 2022 based on the release schedule of previous episodes of Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, but it has now been confirmed that that will be debuting on Disney Plus on the 3rd of February 2023. That's fine. That's not too much later than we thought. We've just mentioned that we've got Obi-Wan imminent, followed soon after by Andor. We don't yet know when Bad Batch is going to be slotted in. It's beyond the window that it was previously announced, but that was sort of an announcement that was a bit withdrawn in terms of formal scheduling. There is going to be Bad Batch panels at celebrations, and we will almost certainly get some sort of confirmation over the next few days as to when we will see Bad Batch. So hopefully that will fill the gap between the end of Andor and the start of Mando Season 3. Now, frustratingly, there was some cool footage from Mando Season 3 shown at Celebration, but this has not been formally released online. There are leaked cam versions online, and there is, in fact, one in the SWZ Facebook discussion group if you want to go check that out before it gets pulled down. It's not spoilery. I think it's a little bit unfair that this isn't distributed more widely, so I don't think it's unreasonable to try and hunt those down.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure in what context this was debuted. I'm seeing people describing that it was on the main stage as sort of part of the big opening panel. But that seems odd because if you can see any footage of the main stage, everyone there has their phones out. Yeah. So I'm not sure why they would try and keep this from being on the internet, because it's just about every second person would have recorded this on their phone. So I'm really hoping that it's just delayed, it'll come out later or something like that, that we'll get it properly, because there are some really neat moments.
It's a lot of Bo-Katan, there's a lot of new Mandos.
Yeah, we can see the way it gives a direction. We can see where the storyline is going to go.
It is basically, as we've speculated in the past about Mando's redemption or his pursuit of redemption.
It's less about sort of bounty hunting. As we sort of first were introduced to him, we're going a little bit deeper into sort of his personal quest and things like that. We obviously see Grogu. There is one really fun shot. This isn't a spoiler in any way. We see a tree full of quaking monkey lizards that I just thought was really fun.
That was cool.
And yeah, I really hope that they put this in a proper format online, because, you know, in the modern age, unless you're doing the thing where you're taking away everyone's phones, it's good to get on the internet. So just put it out there so people can watch it. Fingers crossed it'll show up soon.
All right, so the main takeaway from that is that season 3, February 2023, still fits in well in terms of getting us lots of Star Wars content spaced out over the next year and moving forward. Now, a new formal announcement. We've talked about a live-action series that's had the working title Grammar Rodeo. In previous podcasts, we've known that this has been in production, and it's interesting because it's kind of been slotted into the schedule without a lot of fanfare. Formally announced today to have a title of Skeleton Crew, so that's what we'll be referring to it. So Skeleton Crew is the full title for what was previously known as Grammar Rodeo. This is an original live-action series starring Jude Law, from the executive producers John Watts, Christopher Ford, John Favreau, and Dave Filoni. It is going to be streaming in 2023, so it's one of our 2023 titles. We've got Mando S3 confirmed, we've got Ahsoka confirmed, and we've now got Skeleton Crew confirmed for 2023, so that's quite a cool lineup. It is set after Return of the Jedi. As well as Jude Law as being a main adult cast member, there's a casting notice has called in for children. We're expecting the rest of the cast to be around 11 to 12 years old. The show has been described as a galactic version of classic Amblin coming-of-age adventure films of the 1980s. That's about all we know at this point. There is concept art that was shown at Celebration that shows a large, looks like a scaled-up version of a U-Wing almost, spaceship that presumably the adventures of Jude Law and these children in whatever format or to whatever goal are going to have their adventures in.
Yeah, it's fun when these sort of new titles get sort of dropped on us like this. Because I remember back when Disney Plus was trying to amp everybody up and they gave us all those logos and titles for a whole bunch of shows with no much information, you know?
This is not one of those. This is out of the blue.
Yeah, we kind of got whispers of this, but this is a full official casting sort of debut, you know, Jude Law. I think he's cool. He's done all sorts of sort of fan favorite things going back decades. So I'm always excited when an actor that I'm already a fan of, joins into the Star Wars universe. I can't wait to learn out more about this show, his character. And yeah, 2023, that's not, I like it when they announce something and then tell us when we can expect it. You know, some of these things, like some of the video games and books and things like that, they're like, oh, we're making this thing, but we don't know when it's come out. So maybe in the next 5 years. And it's like, oh, I'm trying to get excited, but you don't know how long. But next year, this really does add another piece in the puzzle of what the content strategy is going to be.
Yeah. Well, it lets us sort of predict or speculate on what the entire release schedule for next year will be, because we've got Acolyte as well. I forgot about that briefly. 2023 is going to be a year of much, much variety. It's going to be a little bit different from previous years.
And just such a stark reminder back when we sort of, I guess it's having Ewan and Hayden together again makes my brain go back to thinking about the hype for episode 3 when it was 3 years between, and then you got 2 hours. Two hours and a bit of Star Wars, and then you had to wait 3 years or maybe more. You didn't know, you know? And now we're like, oh man, I got to wait a few months, a few weeks. It's crazy to think of just the sheer number of minutes and hours of Star Wars we're going to have by the time we get to the middle of next year.
Okay, speaking of Ewan and Hayden, that actually brings us on to the next topic. Now, if you're listening to this after watching Obi-Wan Kenobi, some of these points that we're about to discuss will almost be redundant, but this all relates to the May-June issue of Vanity Fair. There's been a lot of material from it coming out online over the last week or so, and it's particularly interesting because it does dive deep into, but not so much details about, well, some details about the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, but a lot about the roles that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Hayden Christensen play and their experience with Star Wars in general. And this has been in conjunction with a bit of a press tour that they've been doing through Europe, and they've been talking a lot to lots of different people, you know, about their historic experiences and their more recent experiences. And it's really been interesting to see. And I think we'll focus on that when I talk about that shortly. So the Vanity Fair magazine, May-June issue, it has Ahsoka, Andor, Kenobi, and Din Djarin on the cover. Quite cool to see the lineup from each of those main tentpole live-action series all together. They were actually shot all together. It's not a composited, photoshopped image. And there are some behind-the-scenes video that sort of show that photograph being crafted, which is really fun. And one main core theme from all of this material is it's really starting to cement the notion that there is this content strategy and a release schedule for all of the upcoming content, and that's starting to settle down now, and we'll be talking about that a little bit over the next few minutes. Okay, so the content for the next couple of minutes that we're going to talk about, it's going to jump around just a little bit because I want to focus on, first of all, everything in the, well, Vanity Fair, but also there's been content coming out through some other magazines and websites, Empire Magazine and so forth. But in particular, notable, as I say, that Ewan, Moses Ingram and Hayden have all been on a promo tour in Europe. And yeah, like I say, I'm just going to jump around a little bit and we're going to hit on a few content bits related to that promo tour, but also the other live action series. Empire Magazine talks about the promo tour. I was really excited to see this. I was really excited to seeing the love for the prequels, in fact, that they were finally experiencing. And we saw a little bit of this even today on stage at Celebration, both Hayden and Ewan really getting, you know, some positive reactions from the fans.
Yeah, one of the things that they sort of touched on during the Celebration sort of panel, where they do it on the Celebration sort of stage, the sort of fan stage in front of audience, was the fact that social media was very, very different. Online was very, very different during the prequel era. We didn't quite have the same sort of formats like Twitter and Facebook than we did in 2002, 2005, when sort of the episode 2, episode 3 movies came out with these two main actors. And nowadays, we've had that sort of passage of time, as Ewan described, the people that were young, that grew up with the prequels, are adults now, and they are sort of, you know, loud voices in the noise of Star Wars fandom, and there is this overwhelming love for the prequels, because for many of us, myself included, it represents how we found Star Wars. It was what drew us in, what we grew up on, and that is like such a huge sort of component of our love for Star Wars. And now with social media and Celebration, we're finally getting these two actors in front of a crowd full of Star Wars fans. The Star Wars fans are going nuts, you know, and screaming out that they love you and stuff like that to these actors that have never really gotten the chance to really sort of bond directly with an audience. And it was so fun to see them really sort of receiving that love love and appreciation, knowing how much the fans really love it, because we know how much the media likes to blow out, oh, Star Wars fans don't like this, blah, blah, blah. But that's not really the case. That's a vocal minority not speaking for everyone. And it's so neat to see this, just the sort of the love for the prequels getting expressed online. Yeah, you don't have to love all the Star Wars. I know some people are still not fond of the prequels, but there is a lot of us that do love them. And it's really neat that we're finally getting the chance. And it's fun to know that they are appreciating sort of online culture. Obviously, there are so many lines from the prequels that people just love. And I thought it was really fun that they sort of ended the Ewan and Hayden interview with Hayden Christensen uttering the line in his good Anakin voice, "This is where the fun begins," you know, his classic line from episode 3. And the crowd just goes nuts. There's tons of people around them and everyone just starts cheering, you know. It's such a moment. And it was so fun to see that on the live stream, that they captured that. And just sort of, it really encapsulates that they understand how much the prequels are loved and how excited people are to see them back in Star Wars again. So we can sort of like relive that prequel era all over again.
So I want to just work through a few of the key points from the promo tour. I'm going to read from a few different sources. A lot of these are focusing on Ewan McGregor in the first instance, from Empire Magazine's summer 2022 issue. This is what Ewan has to say about the Obi-Wan Kenobi. Kind of interesting. "It went through several different iterations. We were talking about it being a movie. I said, I think it could be a story about a man who's broken and lost his faith, and it could be quite dark. How does he get it back? That's where we started. Taking someone we know as an example of what the Jedi stand for, someone who's on the Jedi Council and is respected, and take them to a place where we've never seen them before. He's guilt-ridden that he's lost Anakin to the dark side, and all his close spiritual friends, Yoda, everyone's gone into hiding, so he's lost. Stephen Daldry was going to direct it for a time, but he was attached to direct a big movie and just couldn't do it. Then Deborah Chow became the director." Side note, Deborah Chow's going to direct all episodes of this, so it's going to be quite interesting to see what impact that has on the overall feel and flavour. "So Deborah Chow became the director and she took the project in two different directions because it became a series and then the storyline shifted a bit. She's got an amazing depth of understanding of that world. I don't know if it's because of her work with The Mandalorian, but she really knows the world inside out. It's very broad now with the animations and the video games." Ewan goes on to say, "I don't know what happened in episode 29 of Clone Wars, for instance, but she does." He says, "We had a great experience working together in the prequels, doing the fight stuff. I'm not going to talk too much about anything that Hayden and I might or might not do in the fight world. It might be that we continue some of that in this one. We'll see. I had a lot of fight stuff to do in the series and in different ways, not necessarily always with a lightsaber." Separately, in a UK TV series, Ewan mentions that he got to listen to John Williams record the Obi-Wan Kenobi theme live and tells us that it's very special. It's interesting, John Williams returned just for the specific Obi-Wan Kenobi theme. Keen fans of the original trilogy will know that there hasn't actually been a Kenobi theme specifically written amongst John Williams' other music. So very, very cool that he's come back around to do that. And we actually heard it this morning, didn't we?
Yeah, it was really neat. They got John Williams conducting the new Obi-Wan Kenobi theme for the sort of big main stage panel presentation at Celebration. The crowd went nuts. I mean, it's always amazing to see John Williams conducting live. It felt really special to see that with a huge sort of auditorium of people.
And finally, speaking to On Demand Entertainment, Ewan also says he's talking about getting back into the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi. He says that it's kicked off when they did screen testing of other actors. They used the Mandalorian set on one of the days off filming and found it a very interesting experience because so many of the crew are Star Wars fans and he found that quite an interesting atmosphere. He said that it took a while to get back to the voice, listening to Alec Guinness. Now that's something that he's mentioned a few times, that he's really based his characterization of Obi-Wan Kenobi not so much on a knowledge of the Star Wars lore, but on how he saw it portrayed by Alec Guinness in the original trilogy. So all in all, it's really great to see Ewan and Hayden as ambassadors for this series as much as anything else, and we'll know a lot more how it's going to pan out within a few hours, 7 p.m. New Zealand time tonight.
As I mentioned earlier, getting into the prequels is sort of like how I discovered Star Wars and just the intense hype of that era and the excitement and how sort of all consuming it was. It's been building for a while. And I think now that today is the day we finally get to see the Obi-Wan, just it feels like you know, 20 years of anticipation has been building for this moment, you know, since we saw Hayden and Ewan together in Attack of the Clones in 2002. 20 years later, here we are. I get to see them sort of, you know, do those characters again. And just, this was not something that we ever, ever anticipated seeing. After episode 3, it was like, we didn't even think we were going to get any more Star Wars, let alone having these two return. You know, there was always this clear distinction that there is the saga films and we don't get stuff sort of outside of that. And then we're like, oh, okay, let's do some Clone Wars cartoons because the fans want some more, but we're not going to do live action and all that kind of stuff. And it's really just progressed to the point where they're just giving us our wildest dreams, getting these two back together, you know, continuing Obi-Wan's story. I'm just like, oh, so jittery, just waiting for the minutes. You know, it's like, hurry up. I need to get to 7 o'clock. I want to be sitting there. It's going to be jittery because we haven't had the experience of going to a Star Wars movie for some years. You know, we've had the pandemic, we've had Disney Plus and things like that. Things have taken a shift, but I think this is one of those ones where we'll remember what it was like watching this. You know, you turn down your living room lights, you know, get your popcorn ready, and it's going to be one of those moments. And oh my gosh, if you are unfortunate enough to not be able to watch this when this drops on Disney Plus, you are going to have to stay off the internet. I think it's going to be hugely rife with spoilers. If you don't care about spoilers, I'd say go ahead. But I do hope that wherever you are, you've got the ability to watch this live on Disney Plus as it shows. So you can just be a part of the Star Wars sort of community and all watching this simultaneously at the same time.
All right, I want to move on to talk about the Ahsoka series, which is also discussed in Vanity Fair from a couple of other sources as well. Just a small bit of trivia. The actor Matthew Law, who was in Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., another Disney series, has been added to the cast. We don't know much about that, but if you're familiar with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you might recognize the name. Separately, on the Disney Plus Twitter, they have confirmed that it started production. When that tweet came out, it was revealed by way of a director's chair that had Dave Filoni's hat on it. Interesting to know that they were emphasizing his role in it. And that continues on to the Vanity Fair discussion. In Vanity Fair, Dave Filoni actually speaks on the topic of the Ahsoka series. He says, "It is a continuous story. It is definitely driving towards a goal, in my mind, as opposed to being little singular adventures. That's what I want the character to be doing, and I think that's what fans want now. They all have such a relationship with her. I've only recently started to understand that all those kids that watch the Clone Wars are now a lot older. They're very excited about all the things they grew up with, as they should be."
I think it was important that they sort of revealed that Ahsoka started filming with a nod to Filoni. Obviously, he is like synonymous with the character. I don't think fans would really be fully on board with an Ahsoka live action series if Dave Filoni was not heavily involved with it. So I think it's really exciting and definitely really intriguing that he's talking about this being sort of like a long continuation of the story. We know that Dave Filoni has sort of long-term storylines and things like that involved. Like, obviously, with the Clone Wars Season 7, he was able to finally sort of conclude this long story arc that he'd had in his mind. I remember talking to Sam Witwer some years ago when he was a guest at Armageddon here in New Zealand. Yep. And he was talking about that, you know, like the times when he was sort of pressing Dave Filoni, like, you know, where was the story going to go? All this kind of stuff and kind of getting nods and winks and things like that. And then when he found out that they were finally going to get to go back and actually tell those stories that had been in Dave Filoni's mind all these years, was just like, it gave him chills. And so it's exciting that we finally get, yes, it's not the Clone Wars, but Ahsoka is an important component of the Clone Wars. And so there's a continuation that's sort of being governed over by Filoni. So it's a singular vision sort of guided by someone that sort of, you know, helped craft Ahsoka, because Filoni created Clone Wars alongside George Lucas. George Lucas kind of, you know, was there creating Clone Wars.
He signed off on everything.
Yeah, so he knew what was being done. He, yeah, as you say, signed off on everything. So it really feels like, you know, Filoni's been there from the beginning, passing this on and seeing the progression from that sort of early, from, I remember seeing the Clone Wars movie in the theaters because they released the first like sort of episode, sort of long feature length episode as a movie in the theaters, to now where we are in this explosion and those characters and where it's gone. It's really exciting. I hope we don't have to wait too much longer to get a few more snippets from the Ahsoka live action. Obviously, there wasn't really too much. We know what she looks like. We're getting some casting calls, but I'm crossing my fingers that this one will be released next year and not like right at the end of next year. I know that that's possibly a reality here, but I'm on the juggernaut of stuff coming out. I'm like, okay, they're filming. Okay, how many days do I have to count down until I can watch this, you know? Because it does feel like they are filming one year, releasing it the next. Yeah. So it feels like they've got such a good turnaround for this stuff. You don't want to hold on to streaming service content for too long. You want to get it out there so you can kind of keep people amped up and they go, yeah, I'll stay subscribed because I know this is coming soon. You wait too long, people go, nah, wait till it just hits and then I'll watch it sometime.
I don't know if we know how many episodes we're going to get out of Ahsoka just yet, but I'd say they've completely finished production by the end of the year, so it could be released at any time, and the release will probably be more determined by the scheduling of other shows rather than the amount of time it takes just to wrap it up.
It makes me wonder if they do have a release date in mind. They generally do if they know, okay, production is going to go from this date, post-production, this date. So we might get a glimpse of a little bit of a release schedule for next year in further panels at Celebration. They might accidentally or not, you know, intentionally give us release dates for the ones that everyone knows is in production. It's not a secret. It'd be kind of fun if they could say, oh, you know, we're goaling for like fall or something like that, you know?
All right, let's talk about Andor again. We've already talked about it, obviously, in relation to the trailer, but I want to just speak about its coverage in the Vanity Fair magazine. Primarily in Vanity Fair, they're speaking to Tony Gilroy, who is the writer for Andor. So let me read from that magazine. Gilroy is known for writing the first four Bourne thrillers, and he received Oscar nominations for both writing and directing the film Michael Clayton. He got involved with Star Wars by helping to rework Rogue One during its reshoots. This is the fun bit. He says, I have a sheet in front of me. I have 211 speaking parts in the show. There's probably 75 people in there who really matter, and there's at least a dozen seriously important characters that we'll be carrying forward into the second season. He says, it's a huge orchestral Dickensian ensemble cast with Diego at the middle of it and Genevieve in the middle of another part of it. They intersect. I'm not going to get into how they intersect, but they do have an intersection. They do not meet immediately. They will not meet until the second half. Her character is still in the galaxy's leadership class of the capital world of Coruscant, trying to navigate the turmoil of the Emperor's new autocracy while quietly fomenting opposition. But Andor doesn't start there. Here's where it gets a little spoilerish. Our show starts with a very simple, almost film noir situation for a thief. A skeevy kind of guy gets in big trouble, tries to sell something he has to save his ass. Gilroy reveals a rebel talent scout has been watching him with interest and he's sort of recruited on the worst day of his life. That storyline focuses on Luna and two unspecified characters played by Stellan Skarsgård and Adria Arjona. On episode 4, we leave there and we begin to expand out. So, tiny bits of story clues there, formally revealed in Vanity Fair, so not really considered spoilers at this point, but it gives us information.
Yeah, this really gives us an idea of the kind of pacing, the kind of storyline we're going to get in at least this first season. It feels like this is going to be a little bit of a slow burn, but a sort of a long, deep dive into the rebellion. I get the feeling we might not get too much sort of overlap with this and other shows. They're going to have very different aspects.
No,
we're
going to
have like
really
fighter
kind of
pilots and like in like the Rogue Squadron. This is going to be the rebels on the ground. I feel like they're going to try and be as broad and sort of include so much about the rebellion in that era.
So it's
in
not
this
going to
show.
Need a lot of other supplementary material.
Obviously, it does overlap timeline wise with things like the Bad Batch in that sort of, you know, in that 20-year gap between episode 3 and episode 4. There is a lot of stories there to cover, but I really feel like this one's giving us a chance. Like,
it's going
like
to tell us a lot about the state of the galaxy.
Yeah, like they're talking about Mon Mothma being kind of separate. You know, she's in the glitzy sort of world of the Senate and Coruscant and things like that. She's not running around in sort of the mud and the rebel sort of alliance, you know, fighting in the underground. But it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of stuff starts to cross over and become intertwined. Look, because she is alongside all the rebel fighters by the time we get to Return of the Jedi.
This notion of these two parallel stories of Mon Mothma's side of the development, establishment of the rebellion and Andor on the ground. I don't know, I'm almost getting goosebumps sort of thinking about the significance of those story arcs.
Yeah, because we know that Mon Mothma was originally in episode 3, sort of alongside Padme, and we know that sort of underground movement when they could see what was happening with, you know, Supreme Chancellor Palpatine and what was happening in the Republic, and you could see that sort of, they called it the sort of the loyalist committee, you know, the people that wanted things to be like the Republic was, but they know that something's not right, and that sort of that very, very beginnings of the rebellion, because they had Mon Mothma, they had Bail Organa, and Padme Amidala, and of course we know the sort of the tragedy that befalls a few of those characters. But I'm still crossing my fingers we might get mention of Bail Organa. I'm almost curious to see, because of that shot of the Senate chamber, that we might even get like Palpatine's voice giving a speech or something like that, or you know, like some sort of note just to remind us that he's there and in control. I'm still really crossing my fingers that there will be some element of Palpatine, particularly with how many Imperials we saw in this teaser as well.
Well, we know he has a presence during this timeline, so yeah, even if it's just, well, actually having Ian McDiarmid involved would be super cool, but yeah, his presence has to be referenced in some shape or form.
And of course, the big question is whether they will ever reference Vader in this as well, or whether they want to keep that very sort of a little bit compartmentalized with the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. And they don't want to kind of confuse people, or people that are new and trying to figure out, oh, this guy's over here, this guy's over here. Because they know that Disney Plus is introducing Star Wars to a new generation of people, people that have been aware of Star Wars. They know the whole I am your father thing, but they haven't really sat down and explored the full world and depth of storytelling there. So it'll be interesting to see where they fall on that line, whether they're just like, oh, Vader's our main guy. We put him in video games, we put him in books, we put him in all this sort of stuff, and they'll just like stick him in because they know it's in the timeline. Like, I wasn't expecting to have Tarkin and Vader in Rogue One. I thought they might sort of want to go, oh, no, that's for the main saga trilogies, and then having them in there was a really fun bonus.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect to see a lot of Vader, but I think we may get a taste of how the people on the street, to what extent they're aware of his existence.
Yeah, because obviously the day-to-day people, they're going to get the stormtroopers. And it was interesting, there seems to be some sort of like local Imperial-aligned police in the trailer. So it'll be really interesting to see how just the day-to-day people on sort of galactic
how
planets,
how they're exposed to the influence of the Empire.
Yeah, and how they sort of, we see one in the sort of Imperial police uniform that, I don't know, there's something about the expression on his face that makes me sort of think back to Lost Stars, the novel where the sort of the Imperial sort of officers are sort of becoming aware of what the Empire is capable of, and maybe they're not on the right side. And I think that would be a fascinating story to weave through the rebellion. Are we going to see an Imperial defect and join the rebellion? It would hark back to Bodhi Rook from Rogue One. We see the Imperial defect with important information and join the rebels because he knows he's not on the right side.
Okay, just two more things to talk about from Vanity Fair. One of them is really, really key and interesting. Well, both are, in fact, but I'm really excited by this next sentence. Taika Waititi's film is, in fact, expected next before Rogue Squadron. That's confirmed in Vanity Fair when they're sort of talking about the overarching content strategy. Previously, we didn't really know where it was going to fit in, and there was information that Rogue Squadron, despite delays being on and off, would be the next theatrical release, but now formally spoken that Taika Waititi's Star Wars film will be the next Star Wars theatrical release. Finally, a little bit more information about the upcoming Star Wars movie that we know is going to be produced by Kevin Feige. Michael Waldron is writing that, and he is the writer of various Marvel Studio projects like Loki and the recently released Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. In Vanity Fair, they state that he is now turning his attention to the Star Wars film that Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige will be producing. He says on the topic, "We're finally into it in earnest. I mean, I'm writing away. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying having the freedom on that to do something that's not necessarily a sequel or anything. It maybe has a little bit less of a, it just doesn't have a bunch of TV shows and movies that you're servicing on top of it the way I did with Doctor Strange. So it's nice. It feels like a different exercise." So the take-home from that, there is a yet unnamed film being written by Michael Waldron, expected after Taika Waititi's film, and the key message is that it doesn't seem to tie into other existing Star Wars material.
Or at least not tightly.
Yeah, Yeah, it'll exist in the galaxy, in the timeline, of course. But
yeah, which is really interesting. I just wish they could give us more information when they drop these kind of tidbits out there. Yeah. I know that for a lot of these people, they're like, oh, I'm working on this project. I can't really say that much,
It's quite a bit down the line. Yeah. At least we're starting to get this content strategy crystallized and communicated.
Yeah. It's just, you want to get so excited and you're like, when is it? Like, what is it? And you want some sort of more information to just so you can sort of add it to your list of things to be excited about.
All right. I've got a whole array of other little bits of interesting news. Some of it trivial, some of it quite big. The mobile app game Star Wars Hunters has just recently opened up to Australia and New Zealand. In fact, the soft launch beta phase has opened up to Australia and New Zealand. They say on their website and social media, we're welcoming Australia, New Zealand and Taiwan to the arena in our next phase of soft launch expansion, available now on iOS and Android.
Yep, very keen to take a look at this in the coming days. Just want to get through the hype and busyness of Kenobi and Celebration first.
So Star Wars Hunters, it hasn't actually been released in the US yet, so we're getting it ahead of them because we're a smaller market and they're just sort of testing and ramping up things in that way. There's an upcoming book that we've talked about once or twice that we're quite excited about in some ways, The Princess and the Scoundrel. Featuring Han Solo and Princess Leia. The cover art for this has been revealed. It's very, very nice. It harks back to the older hardcover novels of the expanded universe of the 90s and early 2000s, like The Courtship of Princess Leia and so forth. Beth Rivas is the author. It is coming out on August the 16th. You can actually pre-order that now in New Zealand, including from A Mighty Ape. It's set after the events of Star Wars Return of the Jedi and will feature the wedding of Han and Leia, a well-deserved moment of joy after years of fighting, says the official synopsis. But when the duo embarks on their honeymoon aboard the luxury Halcyon Star Cruiser, they find that the battle with the Empire is far from over. We've talked about the upcoming Star Wars Mandalorian comic in previous podcasts. Now, this is a 8-issue series, 1 issue per episode of The Mandalorian. Quite like that format, and I'm looking forward to getting it. Our first look at internal pages for this comic has been released on Marvel.com, so we'll put a link to that down below if you want to get a feel for how that's going to be structured. Also on the topic of comics, coming to the Marvel lineup is a couple of new comics, Star Wars Hyperspace Stories and Star Wars Tales from the Rancor Pit. The first one, Hyperspace Stories, is described as a new anthology comic series featuring tales set in every era of the Star Wars timeline and starring fan-favorite heroes and villains. On the flip side, Star Wars Tales from the Rancor Pit continues the tradition of frighteningly fun stories from Halloween. It's been described as having 3 stories. I think this is probably all going to be wrapped up in a one-shot rather than a limited series. Just a quick soundbite of information related to the Fallen Order sequel, Star Wars Jedi Survivor is its title. It will be releasing next year, February or March 2023. We've talked about excerpts from the upcoming novel Shadows of the Sith. Another excerpt has been released on USA Today, and in this excerpt, Rey's parents have been named. This is the novel coming up that is a prequel to the sequel trilogy. It's being written by Kiwi author Adam Christopher, so in that regard, we're particularly looking forward to it. Rey's parents are showcased in this Luke Skywalker-centric story. Rey's father is named Dathan, and her mother is named Miramir. So, yeah, really interesting to be able to give them names rather than just referencing Rey's mother, as we have been doing for quite some time now.
It's funny, in Star Wars Card Trader, her official card just says Rey's mother. Yeah. We've never been able to give her a character a name, so it's fun now.
All right, product announcements and store reports. There's a lot to sort of juggle here. Some of it is local store reports, some of it is products that have been announced in conjunction with the Obi-Wan Kenobi release, and some of it is just stuff that's been leaked in relation to the way product reveals have been ramped up just at this point in time. First up, Obi-Wan Wednesdays is the name they're giving to, Lucasfilm is giving to the regular cadence of product announcements on StarWars.com. So www.starwars.com/Obi-Wan Wednesdays will be updated each week with highlights for new products. Some of the things that are going to be coming out that have already been revealed as part of this or leaked in association with it is that we're going to see a Lego Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi's Jedi Starfighter. That's a prequel version. We're also going to see the Inquisitor's ship with a couple of the Inquisitors as minifigures. That looks quite nice, and it's quite interesting to see the Inquisitor's ship in a proper iteration, a proper sort of version. They seem to be focusing on Reva, the Third Sister's character, as part of the initial wave of figures. She is going to get a retro collection figure, presumably accompanied by other Kenobi series retro collection characters, a vintage collection figure, and a Black Series figure, of course. Also, speaking of Lego, I think this one is a little bit of an informal leak. From Fallen Order, we're expected a BD-1 character set. This looks like it's approximately 1-to-1 scale in the same way that they've done Dio previously. And I think given the cuteness of this droid, it will be quite a sought-after set.
Yeah, this is one of those ones that immediately makes me want to jump and grab it off the shelf. It's such a cute design, such a neat design. I thought it was really fun that they added this droid design to the Mandalorian, mm-hmm. helping Palimoto on Tatooine. So I think this one's going to be popular, possibly sort of more a significant character than Dio. Dio is cute, but he's not as significant. I think this one will be more popular.
Yeah, I think so too. Also from Lego, a couple of brickheads, Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi, as seen in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. I guess it's not too surprising that those two are going to lead the way for the next Brickheads releases, because they are definitely focusing on both Obi-Wan and Darth Vader in the sort of marketing logos and packaging for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Local store reports for a little bit here. A lot of excitement locally because Star Wars Garden statues have returned to Bunnings. The price has gone up a little bit from the very early releases. They're now $49, but that's still quite fair because these are very, very fun and sought-after products. Distribution's been a little bit haphazard in New Zealand. I think the North Island's getting a lot more luck than some of the smaller regions in the South Island, but this wave features Yoda, Darth Vader, Kylo Ren, a First Order Stormtrooper, R2-D2, and Boba Fett. And there are pictures of all of those on the SWNZ website. We are fans of these. Also locally, recent Obi-Wan Kenobi pop vinyl figures were revealed, and they are up for pre-order from all the usual Funko retailers in New Zealand, including, of course, Mighty Apes. So this first wave includes Darth Vader, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Reva the Third Sister, a deluxe statue of Obi-Wan on an EOP, and Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi keychains. Quite like that EOP one in particular.
Yeah, it's fun because that's the creature that we see him riding when he is on Tatooine to deliver Luke Skywalker to Owen and Beru Lars. And it's fun that they have sort of included that in this new sort of Obi-Wan series. Obviously, they're just sticking to things that we've seen in the trailer. I'm hoping that we do get a lot more from the series later on down the line. But this is a good lineup for a first wave of Funko Pops.
We're going to run through a bunch of New Zealand Mint releases. We talk about New Zealand Mint because they are a New Zealand company, even though their products are all available internationally. But they have a lot of concurrent legal tender Star Wars coins being released on an ongoing basis. We seem to have hit a bit of a nexus where a number of their lines have just converged, and there's been a lot of coin releases in the past week. So I'll just run through them quickly, but do check them out on nzmint.com if you are following these. A 1 ounce silver, 3 ounce silver, and 1/4 ounce gold sandcrawler. Some of those are already sold out. They move quite quickly. I believe it's the 1 ounce silver that's still in particular available. This is part of their classic coin line, part of their Faces of the Empire line. We're up to a clone trooper, a phase one clone trooper from Attack of the Clones. They've jumped around a little bit from their previously hinted at release schedule. We'll get back to the sequel characters like Kylo Ren that they've talked about in their release schedule, but we're looking at prequel characters just at this point in time. A Darth Vader 3 ounce silver coin. This seems to be a sort of a standalone series. Not quite the same as their other classic coin lines where you have silver, 1 ounce, 3 ounce, and 1/4 ounce gold coins. And we talked previously in their upcoming news, they talked about a Bad Batch series that would be imminent. And the first coin from the series, Hunter, and a 1 ounce silver coin has in fact been released. I think that was actually just this morning, New Zealand time. So quite a long list of New Zealand Mint collectible coins, all legal tender, as we've discussed many times before. Definitely fun to check out if you are a collector of those lines. This new product line that I'm going to talk about is one that really, really excites me, excites us. It's coming from the company Jazzwares. We have talked about this previously, historically, in the SWNZ podcast. It's a new line that they're calling the Micro Galaxy Squadron. Now, the key thing about this line is that every vehicle, every spaceship or other ground vehicle released in this line is in scale with each other. And they have a bit of a Action Fleet Micro Machine vibe to them, but that notion of everything being in scale really speaks to me, and I can almost see being trying to be a completist in this. The challenging thing about this line is that there are going to be rare and chase variants packaged in as well as the sort of standard releases. So being a complete completist might be a little bit of a challenge. Hopefully we will see these from local retailers. At the moment, you'll have to get them via Amazon. But here's what we're expecting from this line, is sort of the first initial waves. In the Scout class, the smallest class of vehicles, we're getting a speeder bike. Each of these, just a side note, each of these packaged vehicles comes with minifigures. And because everything's in scale, all the minifigures are the same scale and are also sort of usable between each of the different vehicles. And they're going quite wide. They're casting the net quite wide in terms of what is going to be included in the line. Some interesting expanded universe vehicles included. The next size up, the light armor class, includes the AT-ST Raider and AT-ST, Asajj Ventress's Genovex Starfighter, Imperial Troop Transport, and Armored Assault Tank. In the Starfighter class, this is all the sort of one-person, two-person vehicles, Darth Vader's TIE Advanced, Standard TIE Fighter, Outland TIE Fighter, described as rare, Luke Skywalker's Snowspeeder, Luke Skywalker's X-Wing Fighter, Red 5, Luke Skywalker's X-Wing Fighter, Red 5 Aged, which is a super rare variant, X-Wing Fighter Blue 1, super rare variant as well, a Mandalorian Starfighter, Obi-Wan Kenobi Delta 7B Jedi Starfighter, and the variant for that latter one is Ahsoka Tano's Delta 7B Jedi Starfighter. Starship class scales up to show us the Razor Crest, or a scavenged version of the Razor Crest, Boba Fett's Starship, the Slave 1, and the biggest of the line so far will be the Assault class, which includes at this point the Millennium Falcon.
This is such a fun range. I mean, vehicles are such a fun, crucial component of Star Wars. But then, yeah, every time there's been a vehicle line, it always kind of seems to peter out or just kind of never really give us the range and the sort of different designs that I think we would really want to sort of have all displayed. I love the idea of it being in scale with all the little matching figures and things like that. I can't wait for these things to start hitting shelves so we can get a look at them together. I'm sure there'll be all sorts of pictures of people putting them all on shelves with them all kind of in scale. I think they're super fun. And yeah, fingers crossed that they're available in New Zealand.
Now, if there's any fans of the Retro Collection figures in the audience, you'll be interested to hear that there is a Amazon exclusive 2-pack featuring the Bounty Hunters IG-88 and Dengar coming out in a little over a month. Now, this sort of brings up the slightly wider conversation about Amazon.com.au. Because exclusives like this can be harder for us to get hold of, but this IG-88 Dengar 2-pack is available for pre-order now on amazon.com.au at a pretty reasonable price. I think all up, including GST and shipping, it comes in at about $30 per figure, so combined about $60 for the 2-pack, which is a shade on the expensive side, but this is an exclusive product, and it is nice to be able to get it through amazon.com.au, and it does just remind us to keep an eye on that site for some other things that we might not be seeing through regular retailers. Oh, and exciting that the first Kenobi Black Series figure, Obi-Wan Kenobi himself, is up for pre-order from a few New Zealand retailers. It's $44 at Mighty Ape. I think there's going to be a bit of a lag. The release date for this is not clear. There's been different reports on different sites, but I think it will be coming out possibly in a couple of months' time, possibly after the series is screened, and then we'll see a steady flow of other Obi-Wan Kenobi series, Black Series, and TVC figures.
It's always kind of funny. Back in the old sort of movie release schedules, we had sort of Force Fridays, which were generally around October for the movies release in December. So we got product for the movies, action figures and the like, months before the movies were released. In this sort of new era of Disney Plus, it feels like they're getting a little tighter. We're not getting quite as much merchandise hitting the shelves, even at release, let alone prior to release. It's a little bit odd because everyone kind of knows what Obi-Wan looks like. He's an established character. Slightly different brown robes to his Jedi robes isn't too much of a spoiler. So it's kind of weird that this one isn't hitting shelves prior to release. You'd think you'd get all the people that are so excited from having watched that first episode that they need to run to their local store and grab the thing, you know, to post on social media and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, yeah. At least they're getting started eventually.
Yeah, it's nice to see it up for pre-order and easily sourceable locally. All right, so we talked about the interesting aspects of the amazon.com.au site and how that gives us access to things that might not be available locally. This is really big news that came through on the SWNZ discussion board. ShopDisney.co.nz is going to be launched in June. So ShopDisney is available in the US and it has a lot of exclusive products that you just can't get through other retailers. Super exciting that we're going to get a New Zealand specific store. It's described as the official home of authentic merchandise for New Zealand. ShopDisneyNZ will support a curated selection of products from global partners including Disney Parks, the Disney Store Japan and more. You'll be able to shop in New Zealand dollars. Delivery expected in 3 to 5 business days from their Asia Pacific warehouse via DHL. Shop Disney brings over 1,000 of our favorite Disney, Pixar, Star Wars, and Marvel products to Australia and New Zealand this year. Get ready to shop the magic this June.
This is kind of a best case scenario for us. For many, many years, there has been what they called the Disney Store in the US and across many other countries, internationally across the globe. Here in New Zealand, we seem to have been too small to have ever gotten a physical Disney store. Then some years ago, possibly sort of predating the pandemic or because of the pandemic, they started closing the retail stores across the world and focused more on the sort of rebranded Shop Disney website. And yes, a lot of product from Shop Disney can be shipped to New Zealand. They don't sort of region block. There are some licensed specific things or exclusives or custom merch that won't ship internationally. So you have to use a freight forwarder for it. They don't block freight forwarders. So that is a good news. But this one I think is really good. While we probably would never see a physical Disney store in New Zealand, or it would be in like Auckland, so many other people couldn't get to it. An online retail store is brilliant, especially since there are many things made for the Asian sort of markets, as well as the Disney parks that are in the Asia region that are hard or almost impossible to get in the US that we'll actually have easy access to. We'll have access to both the Asia Pacific warehouses and the American ones. And you can also order from the UK one, but the UK website does seem to just be a bit of a watered down version of the US one. I know if you go to visit Shop Disney, it tries to direct you to the UK one, but there is very little Star Wars content available on the UK site. So generally always just checked the American one, but this is really, really cool. I'm a little bit concerned by the fact that it says DHL in 3 to 5 business days. Hopefully that's not going to come with a high price tag for shipping, but I think a few of us collectors are a little bit accustomed to high shipping, us being here in New Zealand. I think we just appreciate just being able to order this stuff legit. We're not having to go through eBay scalpers and resellers. We're not having to sort of do the bounce around trying to buy stuff from the American site and bouncing it through a freight forwarder here. You end up paying twice in postage.
It's my gut feel that if they're trying to cater to a New Zealand audience specifically, that the shipping won't be ridiculous. They may even do consolidated shipments that they redistribute from locally in New Zealand.
It makes me wonder if this is an indication that the likes of Disney Plus has done well in New Zealand and Australia, that they are finally bringing this structure to get more merchandise. I've certainly seen it in recent years. The number of licensed Disney merchandise available in New Zealand stores has been huge compared to 20 years ago. Just seeing like the stuff at Kmart and the warehouse and stuff that generally wasn't there, the stuff that I wish that was there 20 years ago, I'm really excited to see, because generally, if there's Star Wars stuff, generally if there's Disney stuff, Star Wars stuff is not too far behind. Yes, not as much, but generally I'm really hoping that there's going to be a good amount of Star Wars merchandise on the site that we haven't been able to get our hands on very easily.
Shop Disney famously does a lot of non-Hasbro figures in quite a few different scales, and some of it's really, really high quality, even better than some of the Hasbro product. One key example of this, listeners, iFighter brought up on the SWNZ discussion board, so thanks for that, is the, what they're calling the Power Force Boba Fett figure. It's priced at US$30, and it looks really, really quite nice. Book of Boba Fett style paint job. And this is the sort of product that we expect to see through Shop Disney locally. Some of these cool action figures. And one other one that I remember quite strongly, I still want to get my hands on because I saw someone talking about it locally, is a very, very large scale, bigger than the Hasbro version of the Jawa Sandcrawler that comes with an array of droids in the 3.75 inch scale.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you've ever had the ability to visit the Disney parks, particularly in the US, you know that the Hasbro product is not heavily featured. Mm. They do stock it, but not very, very often and not in large quantities. They tend to have their own random ranges of merchandise. They have kind of their own versions of Hot Wheel cars, different figures. Some of the figure playsets come with bases. They are clearly targeted at kids, you know, sort of not quite rubber figures, sort of, you know, hastily painted and stuff like that, all the way through to some really nice, I mean, Disney stuff, you can go pretty high end. You know, some of those bejeweled Disney castle collectibles, you can easily run up to in the sort of $20,000 to $50,000 market. So it'll be really interesting to see. Hopefully they'll give us a date. We won't just have to be like refreshing some random URL, hoping that someday it'll go live.
No, it says June. Yeah.
But I'm just hoping like 1st of June, 30th of June. I'm sure we're all very keen to see what we could get our hands on. And I'm hoping that they'll launch with a reasonable array of merchandise and grow over time. I'm hoping it won't just be like, here's three Star Wars things for you. And then, you know,
so we'll keep an eye out for that. And we'll talk about that in the podcast when it does go live. And we'll round out our store reports and product announcements with a couple of leaks. This is kind of interesting. The next HasLab product, I think, has been leaked, and this seems quite legit because someone seems to have worked out how to get images off the developer's version of the HasLab website. I think we're going to be seeing a lightsaber, Reva's lightsaber, so a double-bladed lightsaber with the circular hilt in the center. I think I saw rumors online that this is going to be priced at about $500, which is through the roof. I'm not going to dwell on that just too much. We'll talk about it a little bit more when it's formally announced. We don't know if we're going to see it locally.
This one's an interesting pick. I know most people are willing to shell out a fair few dollars for some of the classic hilts, the favorite hilts, you know, Vader, Luke, even the Darksabers seem to sell well. And I've seen people note that because this one has two blades, they have doubled the price, even though most of the technical engineering is kind of in the hilt. You know, that's what the big bling in the middle that you're paying for. They shouldn't really double the price just because there's one glowy, you know, an extra glowy stick on one end. And I'm
a game we're putting under the HasLab banner as well.
Yeah, but considering that people thought HasLab, initially it felt like it was all going to be for sort of the 3¾-inch scale, you know, the big things that fit into that scale that have never been made before. Like, that's why the Sail Barge and Razor Crest did so well. And then they kind of shot in the left field with the Black Series 6-inch scale Rancor, and that one kind of fell over. I'm not so sure people feel like this one should be. I saw somebody being quite cynical about Hasbro, basically, you know, a multi-million-dollar company, you know, crowdfunding these things. And it's like, well, for the things where you're not sure if they're going to sell well, and yeah, I'm not sure a Reva's lightsaber at this price point would sell well.
If that price point is real, it has yet to be confirmed, then that's a big ask.
I think they could have done something like Rey's double-bladed lightsaber or Darth Maul, or like just pick somebody that's a little bit more known and established, somebody that people know that they love. We haven't seen Reva. And this release is probably supposed to officially happen after the series. She could be the most amazing character ever and everyone's going to love her.
And that's all true, but I don't think it's necessarily about the character. I think we expect from HasLab something to be a little bit more unique.
Yes,
a little bit more complex.
There are lightsabers. We know that there are what feels like dozens of fan lightsaber companies now making really quite sophisticated lightsabers. And in some cases, the quality is much better than any licensed product. You've got the full sort of soundboards with all sorts of colors and effects and a huge array. A real attention to detail. The scale feels right. Every little detail is done with care and attention. Yes, they come with a higher price point, but for collectors that are really into lightsabers, you want authenticity. You want it to feel real. You want it to look amazing, rather than something that's sort of mass produced and has stickers on it and things like that. So I think the people that would want this lightsaber would want an authentic one that's sort of done really, really well, rather than a mass produced one. We've seen Inquisitor slash sort of, I think it was the second or seventh sister, I can't remember, circular lightsaber from fan companies, and they sold well, but that is, you know, one that's established. It kind of isn't, and it was done really, really well. If this one has the hint of plastic or a hint of kind of mass produced about it, people are going to turn their nose up at it. And I think Hasbro is the draw card for action figure collectors. It's where people go for action figure stuff. Yes, Hasbro did inherit the lightsaber line from Master Replicas, you know, years ago, what feels like decades ago, but I'd feel like this one should have just been pumped out alongside all the others.
Yeah. All right, just to round out our product announcements, also a bit of a leak in the Black Series line. This one's a little bit interesting. I've got no idea how we'll be able to access it from New Zealand, but it is definitely worth talking about. They're calling this the Selfie line. In the Black Series scale, we're going to be able to order a bunch of Star Wars characters with our own faces on them, apparently. So we don't know exactly how this will manifest, how you're about to order them, but presumably by sending in a few photos of your face, and they'll generate a figure with your head and a Star Wars character body. So you're about to get a version of Hoth Leia, or at least her Hoth, Princess Leia's Hoth outfit, a First Order Stormtrooper, an X-Wing pilot, and a Mandalorian armored character at this point. Interesting idea.
This was a concept that was trialed, I can't remember how many celebrations ago, when sort of 3D printing was in its infancy. So you kind of got like these fuzzy prints of your face on top of a thing. But they did it at like a booth at conventions where you could get yourself scanned and then go and make, you know, a fairly expensive little 4-inch figure. It'd be really interesting to see how this will work. Like you say, with pictures, you can't sell online. You can't just like send a, you know, scan of your face to somebody. But it does look intriguing. I know everyone loves the idea of having little action figures of themselves and you sort of dressed up as your favorite Star Wars character. So hopefully we'll get a little bit more concrete information about this soon.
So that's a lot to talk about, but just for now, I guess we are done doing talking. If you have any thoughts on the many topics we discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or our website page for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, and at least one more podcast next week. We're going to be really focusing in on our Tuesday schedule so that it fits in well with the Obi-Wan Kenobi releases. Don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Kia ora, kia noho, haumaru, thank you for listening and stay safe.
Tūro Hawaiki, may the Force be with you.